is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
And it's a pleasure to welcome the author, Raj Rajaratnam. His new book is Uneven Justice. This is an autobiography, at the same time an analysis of Wall Street, the Justice Department these last years, especially since the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009. The subplot is the plot to sink Galleon. Galleon is not a ship. It was a hedge fund at the time. And I welcome Raj, and I go to an event that is flabbergasting once you understand Raj's story. This is the Barra Task Force on Insider Trading, publishing findings January 27th, 2020, right before the pandemic. Preet Barra was the former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, an extremely powerful post in the solar system. The task force writes this: for too long, insider trading law has lacked clarity, generated confusion, and failed to keep up with the times. Without a statute specifically directed at insider trading, the law has developed through a series of fact-specific court decisions applying the general anti-fraud provisions of our security laws across a broadening set of conduct. I'll stop there because lack clarity is everything you need to understand. Raj, a good evening to you. Thank you very much. This paragraph is striking to me. How do we understand insider trading from the point of view of a professional? And for many years, you trained very carefully lots of people to understand what is and what is not permissible. Good evening to you, Raj.
Good evening, John, and I'm delighted to be here. I've been an admirer of yours because you explore the truth and you're a fighter as well, and you care about civil liberty. So let me get to your question. Number one, traditionally insider trading was if an insider of a company violated their fiduciary responsibility and traded on that stock. Over the years, this insider trading law has been interpreted differently by different prosecutors. Mr. Barra's interpretation of insider trading laws was a novel approach when he charged me with insider trading. They said they don't have to prove that I knew that the information was tainted or came from an insider. Now, this was shocking to many legal observants. Subsequently, 5 years later, after my case and my appeal, the Second Circuit reversed Barra's aggressive position and said the way insider trading should be, the law should be interpreted, is that the tippee, in this case the investor, should have known that the information came for a tipper and paid some benefit. So let me cut it down to sort of basic understanding. If you went to Best Buy and bought a stolen Apple TV that you didn't know was stolen, should you indict and arrest the guy who bought the Apple TV, or should you indict and charge the store owner who is buying stolen TVs? It's as simple as that. And Barra's theory of insider trading originally was rejected by the Second Circuit, and they called it doctrinal novelty. So he pursued this insider trading with such gusto when he was under the public glare and lights and, you know, sort of drank the Kool-Aid, that I think 10 years later, when he was no longer in the public spotlight, he may have reflected and said, you know, that it's lacks clarity and they feel sorry for the market participants.
And there is a nightmare in your story, Raj. It's October 16th, 2009. You, at the time, were accustomed to getting up extremely early in the morning in New York and going on an exercise bike where you enjoyed a moment for yourself, watching the news and getting ready for the day on Wall Street. That morning, you were surprised to hear a knock at the door. Who was it, Raj?
It was Agent B.J. Kang with several FBI guys, all in blue with yellow letters on their jackets, FBI. they came with guns drawn. And I asked them, what is this about? And they said, we'll tell you later on, get dressed, and we're going to go down to the FBI downtown headquarters. This was a shock, because if you had asked me half an hour before, 10 minutes before, what are the 100 things you worry about, insider trading was something that I was not even on that list. They tried to intimidate me by telling me that my wife looked very happy because she can spend all the money without my concurrence, and told me to, in front of my son, who was hiding under the blanket, he was 13 years old at that time, told me, you won't see your son again for 25 years.
Agent Kang said that. Agent Kang.
Yeah. Agent Kang said that. Now, as I understand it, in lots of white-collar cases, that a district attorney would ask you to come to his office with your lawyer. But the U.S. attorney here wanted to create such a big fanfare. He had just been a district attorney for only 2 months, but mine was his first big case. And he had a big press conference and invited all sorts of cameras and made me do a perp walk, which has traditionally been reserved for mafia people and violent crimes. He wanted to sway the public opinion from day one.
The public opinion at that time was informed on what you were watching on the news. This is October of 2009. The new president has been in office for 10 months. We're in the midst of what was called the Great Recession. Do you connect the atmosphere of the Great Recession and what I can report to you, Raj, all these years later, was a pall hanging over Wall Street at the time? There were many protests that eventually turned into Occupy Wall Street. Do you connect that atmosphere with the way you were treated that morning?
I think the U.S. attorney played on the public opinion. After my case, he was anointed as the sheriff of Wall Street, but not a single banker who contributed, or senior banker who contributed to the financial crisis, were ever charged because Mr. Barrera focused his entire efforts on a small sector of the investment industry, the hedge fund, and got maximum publicity.
At the time of your detention by the FBI, you did not call an attorney. What was your thinking, Raj? Why didn't you call an attorney right then?
Because I didn't think that this was serious. I thought there's some misunderstanding. I would go and tell him, here are the reasons I traded what I traded. And eventually, after 3 or 4 hours of interrogation, my office called an attorney, and he called me and said, don't talk anymore. And I stopped talking. And then we went on to the bail hearing, where the government asked for a bail of $100 million, which was a record in the history of mankind, because they wanted to inflame the public even further. Now, you know, you've heard of Bernie Madoff, obviously. Bernie Madoff siphoned billions, multiple billions of dollars, and his bail was set at $10
million. Right. The Madoff story is still hanging over Wall Street at this time. Raj Rajaratnam is accused of insider trading. However, that has nothing whatsoever to do with the source of the Great Recession, which was about real estate and leverage on Wall Street. However, we're going to turn to what Raj did do at Galleon that is important to understand in the prosecution and the conviction at the time, 2009 to 2011. The book is Uneven Justice, The Plot to Sink Galleon. Raj Rajaratnam is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.